Hello, and welcome to the latest in our series of deep dives into the way the actuarial profession is changing. As the profession evolves to meet the demands of a truly global audience, what it is to be an actuary is also changing to fit this more global perspective. My name is Gareth Grok, and today I'm joined as ever by IFOA President Tan Swee Che and two actuarial leaders in the Asian region. Nicholas Yeo, founder of Actuarial Solutions, and Bian Cao, founder of JEM Tech. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. Thank you so much for joining me today. So the first question is to our two guests, really. What do you think the key issues facing actuaries in your market are at present?
Can I take the question?
Thank you.
Okay, so I guess ultimately actuaries wants to add value and contribute to the society. I mean, as actuaries, we face many issues, but in my view, the issues that most of the actuaries face in our market boils down to the speed of the technology adoption in the insurance industry. This is because most of the actuaries in my market work in an insurance company, but the speed of the technology adoption in the insurance industry is a lot slower than in many other industries. Because of this, actuaries are not really empowered by the latest technology. So without the latest technology at the actuaries' disposal, the value that actuaries can add to the society is actually to a certain extent limited or handicapped by this. So with a lot of the issues that actuaries face is because with the lack of technology, insurance sales is not as much as it can be. Insurance processes are slower than it should be, and hence many day-to-day challenges arise because of this. Maybe I pass to Bian to elaborate and continue.
Okay. Can you see me? Yeah. Okay. I'm most worried about actuary is creativity, actually. I think the world is changing at a much faster speed than it used to be. It changed so quickly, like maybe 6 or 7 years ago, we don't even have an iPhone. But because our actuaries are trained by numbers so long time, so professionally. So I think when the world is connecting together, we may be missing dimensions that are more important than numbers. They are maybe at a great dimension, but we are focused so much on time, on the numbers, that we may forget more important aspects. And there's so many new things coming up. When we pricing, when we modeling, when we do our actuary profession, I think we need to alert ourselves with the creativity and focus on the important stuff to not to miss dimensions to do our job. So yeah, I'm worried about the creativity of our profession.
Okay, I'd like to add a slightly different dimension. Nicholas, could you just check your speaker, because there's a bit of feedback. Just check your speaker, a bit of feedback. But I want to, I know that two of you were carefully chosen by Gareth's team because you are sort of a trailblazer in the Asian context, and I'm very proud to be on the same panel with you. But I wanted to answer Gareth's question in a particular way, because there are two types of answers, right? Because your question is what are key issues faced by actuaries, right? So if I put myself as an actuary in Asia, working in an Indian company or a Singaporean company or a Malaysian company or a Chinese company, even a big company in China or a Takaful company in Malaysia, the worries they are facing is actually more bread and butter at one level. I think at this time of the year, they are probably worried about IFRS 17. They are worried about financial reporting. They could be worried about interest rate being so low, how to deliver the products according to the bonuses we illustrated, right? And then there's something going on in the world of investments, right, about climate change, sustainability. So they need to give an answer in the investment committee. So there's one level, yeah. So I think many actuaries working in Asia will have these bread and butter issues. But your two are sort of at an edge, right? You're at an edge, which I think we can explore a bit more in the later part of the conversation, right? Because and it goes into the heart of IFOA strategy, right? Because you are concerned about the implications of digitalization, right? Digitalization. Because the and that's where Nicholas, I learned about your company a bit more in the last 6 months. You're using AI to do estimates on reserving, right? And Chayan, I also know that your company is doing actual techniques in the health ecosystem. So you're at a more cutting edge, right? And that is a part which is going to disrupt or interfere with the existing insurers. But it's not, but day-to-day, life is about IFRS 17. Life is about submitting statutory returns to the insurance company. So I acknowledge that. But the conversation you are having, which is really about 5-10 years, we got to start investing in how actuaries work in a digital world. And then Chayan, you talk about creativity, which is about values and capabilities. But it's not just about digital, but it's also about sustainability, which is an issue which is also emerging in Singapore and China, maybe less so in Malaysia. Actually, it's not true. Malaysia also came out recently with a Bank Negara about not just about COVID-19, about climate risk in particular. And there's a big conversation in UK. So I think it's really important that actuaries who are not so close to digital world are aware that the boundaries are becoming very blurred, yeah, very blurred. And IFOA strategy is really to provide a handshake, right, to move them along, to help, and also to change the way we provide education and lifelong learning so that they have some kind of guardrails into the future world. So I would, because I want the people who are listening to this, who may be mainstream actuaries, they are worried about IFRS 17. They're worried about compliance or risk reporting, yeah, today. Yeah. But things may change or will change because of all the things you talk about. Yeah.
Thank you all. It's a great scene setter. My next question is to Bayan first, I think, and then Nicholas. You both took the decision to be entrepreneurs. Can we ask what inspired you to do that? And what challenges did you face? And what advice would you give to other actuaries who are contemplating this same path?
I think to be an entrepreneur is a tough thing, really gives me the freedom I want, the freedom to do the things I truly believe in. So I'm always a product person. I really love to do insurance products. And among all the insurance products, I love to do the health insurance products most, because it allows me to not only just looking at the insurance, but I can also look at another big sector, which is the health sector. So that drives me to do that, because I believe that the best health insurance products needed to be supported by a third party. Because you need doctors, you need medical networks, which is very, very difficult to be done in a traditional insurance companies. So that's why it drives me to do this health insurance third party company, because I believe we can help insurance companies to come up with the best health insurance products in the world. The challenges I face, I think like all other entrepreneurs, we face challenges like money, people, clients, as startup companies. But that's just all startups need to go through. We are no more difficult than other startup companies. The only one thing I feel is particularly difficult for me is that I needed to dig very deep into the health sector, and all my experiences and the network are in the insurance sector. So I need to work from zero to build up all these health capabilities I need. This is something I found really, really difficult. But when you made it through, it opens a new door for you, and I can combine medical with insurance. It gives me great advantages. So what most difficult for me or also let me gain the most? For our actuary fellows who also maybe thinking about being an entrepreneur, my advice would be, because before I did a startup company, I consulted many people. One of them is Fred Rowley, who is ex-president of the Australia and International Actuarial Society. He gave me this advice. He said, do as much as you can in your life. I think today I'll give the same word to our fellow actuaries. Maybe it's a difficult journey, but it brings so much interesting things to your life.
Fantastic.
Inspiring. Thank you.
So let me continue. So about 6 years ago, I was returning home from abroad, and basically I was looking for a job. Then I came to a realization that there are no jobs in the market that is aligned to what I want to do. The main reason is because I put a high importance in the ability to determine the strategic direction. I think it's similar to what Bai Yan has said just now. She wants to do what she really thinks is important. It's similar to me. So by setting up my own business, actually, I get to determine the strategic direction of the company. The main challenge, of course, is that the trade-off is that I can get from deciding the strategy is that I do not have a lot of resources like in a very, very big company. So I set up the business with minimum capital and funded it along the way with retained earnings. So because of this, actually, we have let go many opportunities that otherwise could have been pursued, you know, if we had deeper pockets and we were adequately funded. So this is actually the challenge. By determining what I want to do, I basically have to do things in a smaller scale as well, at least in the early stage. The follow-up question is my advice to other actresses contemplating this path. I think they are wasting their time. If you are thinking about it, you should just start doing it. You shouldn't think so much. If you don't do it, then you do not know what will happen.
I did consider being an entrepreneur, but I don't have the mindset and the skills we all have. And I was treated very well by Prudential and a senior executive, so I went into the more organizational transformation and innovation work. But I envy people who are entrepreneurs, and there are many successful actuaries who are entrepreneurs, right? Patrick Poon, Steve Wong, and they are very successful in business, because actuaries are people with a business mindset, right? And they know how to calculate. They have an instinct for risk and uncertainty, right? If they over-calculate, then they shouldn't become business people. But if they have a sense of it, I think they make very good business people. But I love your motto, what is it? Do as much as you can with your life, you know? Start doing it, stop thinking about it, you know? Maybe it's something we could learn a bit more. But I wish I have your courage.
Well, that does...
Not too late.
Well, that does actually tie very much to my next question, which is, there's a view that actuaries are too cautious and too reticent. Do you agree? And what can we do to change that?
Okay. I think our profession, as an actuary, our fellows, we are a bit more, maybe in general, quiet and cautious, more quiet and more cautious than maybe other professions. I like that myself as well. But I think that doesn't mean we are not brave or we are. I don't think that's weakness, actually. We are quiet, but we can take responsibilities. We make decisions. That's maybe the that. And when we make decisions, that's the thought through decisions. We don't make decisions and withdraw. We make decisions and we carry on things because it's a thought through decisions. So I think we are what we are. I don't feel we need to change who we are. Yeah.
Thank you. Nicholas, your views.
So I think it is maybe not necessary that we would pigeonhole the entire profession this way. For me, everyone is actually quite different, actress or otherwise. I've seen many crazy actresses around. I just think that, you know, different people just happen to behave differently. There is this stereotype actress that are so-called cautious and reticent, but I wouldn't say that this is this necessarily speaks for the entire profession in general. I'm not sure if there's anything that we need to do to change it. I mean, everyone is just slightly different in their own ways. Yeah.
I want to offer a slightly different answer and maybe a longer answer. And Nicholas, you are absolutely right. We shouldn't pigeonhole, because the profession is diverse, yeah? And there are many entrepreneurial actresses who are not cautious and not reticent, right? So I think the word I want to use is diversity. Diversity of mindsets, yeah? Diversity of mindset. And we shouldn't be too overweighed by a particular mindset. And I believe that over the last 15 or 20 years, we are overweighed by a certain mindset, which give more emphasis to cautiousness, consistency, reticence, and cautiousness. And that is good for certain types of role. So cautiousness will mean that you make good decisions, but you make it too slow. And if the world is changing very fast, that is not good. Reticence means you are too reserved. But if there are big issues in society which requires to speak up, you are too lack of courage to do so. So that's why we need to compensate it. But we can't change us too fundamentally. So therefore, we create room for diversity of mindsets. And I've been doing some research on presidential address for the last 50 years, starting with Redington. Actually, that was his acceptance speech. And he says that we don't have any besetting vices, but we have besetting virtues. Vices is negative, virtues is good, but besetting means you are overweight. Our virtues, he said, are cautiousness, accuracy, consistency, and reticence. And Reddington is one of the greatest actuaries in the last 100 years. And he is not, by any stretch of what I've read, a psychologist. But what I didn't go and do entrepreneurship. I did go and do a master's in psychology because of my interest. And that belongs to a cluster of preferences, preferences, which dominates the profession in reserve role. And he says that if this take up all our strengths, it will become a weakness. So he said it must create space for imagination and impulse. And impulse, he means gut feel. And Ronnie Bowie, Peter Clark, Nick Salter, all say the same thing. Nick Dumbreck, Jeremy Goldford, Peter Clark. Yeah, I studied. I just compiling a set of notes for a speaker. You know, presidential speaker series. They all say the same thing, which means that I'm not chasing after something which is in my imagination. It has been said with different generations, and that means two things. That means that for some of us, it's about awareness, because our personality and preferences, they are preferences. If you know that you are cautious, or if you are too detailed, if you're aware of it, you can do a compensating thing. If you're not creative, you can do design thinking. If you're cautious, you can do six thinking hats, but you're not fundamentally going to change. But the positioning of the profession, if you want more people to enter in the world of the digital, which requires innovation and curiosity, you want more people to be systemic thinkers. That means you want people with more courage and imagination. You got to position IFOA as a place where such strengths will thrive. And we do have people like that. So if you go to, say, South Africa, you have a whole group of fairly, say, different actuaries who are more into banking. You go to Australia, you'll see many actuaries in the world of digital and data science. And I suspect in China, a bit more of that. And UK, there are too. But many of them are very successful in a senior way, but they're less involved. They're less involved in the main part of IFOA, because the main part of IFOA come from a history of reserve roles in life insurance and pensions business. And we must give due respect and honor that, because that is the foundation of our reputation. We'll come back to later. But we also need to give space to the GI actuaries, who have a very different feel, right? They have more innovation and more entrepreneurship. But I'm not saying that the life actuaries have no entrepreneurship. There are many who have, but they're not in the reserve roles. I can think of two or three of my ex-bosses. They're not chief actuaries, but they're general managers or CEO. Yeah. So this is the delicate part, which IFOA and the BSMD strategy is trying to position. And I've said this to my colleagues, Graham Stott and the chair, and Annette, and who's in charge of policy, and the CEO, Stephen Mann, because this is actually a positioning piece for IFOA, for you to create space to attract the people from universities in the UK and elsewhere. It is not just about analysis and cognitive thinking. It's about solving problems in a digital world and solving problems in the sustainability world. And we need that additional diversity. I want to speak at length on this when I saw this question, partly because it is an emerging thesis, but that thesis is consistent with the presidential address for the last 50 years. Yeah. And we need to be conscious of it without losing the reputation and the premium quality of our qualification, which was given rise by the life and pension business. Yeah. So the health and GI come much later. Health and GI is life and pensions UK, right? But life and pension is going to a difficult time. Yeah, difficult time because traditional products are disappearing. Pension products, in terms of defined benefits, is disappearing. But our skills are still relevant. Yeah, so we need to create new answers to savings, to risk management, and also the digital world and sustainability. So that's what the current strategy is about. And it is not so much about skills, but it's quite a lot about mindsets. Yeah, and Gareth will be a very important person. Yeah, because I know that Gareth will be here for 3, 5, 6 years. Because the positioning of the organization is one of the very important answers, how we are positioned to the outside world.
That's great. I'm a life actuary, by the way.
But you see, you have left, right? Yeah, you have left. And so you with your thinking and with your attitudes over time, maybe you should come back and get more involved, yeah, to create a new conversation. Because we need people who, yeah, because the organization needs to rejuvenate, yeah.
Great.
I think that as if we planned it, Suicheda moves us on to our next question, which is, what excites you most about the future for actuaries either in China, Bayan, or Southeast Asia, Nicholas? How do you see the profession developing in Asia in the future?
In China, what excites me most, I think it's the big data, because China has the largest population. Yeah, you have a 1.4 billion people. And even just one province, the data, the amount of the data it produced can be a country, easily be a European country's produced data. And the data is very interesting. It's developing so fast. The whole China, each industry is digitalizing in an amazing speed. I think the big data, the China market, is accumulating. Is the most interesting thing for this market, and I think in future, maybe I'm looking at those. I think like actuarial engineering. We have loads of data, and we want to find what's the connection between them, and we can use artificial intelligence rather than traditional modeling. Our qualified actuaries, maybe we need to rather than doing the modeling analysis, maybe we can use more artificial intelligence tool or big data tools to come up with our decisions. I think that this is very exciting and interesting. Yeah.
Thank you. And Nicholas.
So in Southeast Asia, basically, one thing sets Southeast Asia apart from the rest of the world is that is the rapid economic growth. It's also quite a sizable economy, multi-trillion-dollar economy with more than 500 million of a population, right? When there's more than 500 million of population and there are only a handful of factories, then of course there's a lot of opportunities for factories in this region. But mainly the opportunities here relate to growth. How do we actually use our skill set to actually grow the market, be it help insurance companies to grow the market or help the economy grow as a whole, right? And so the outlook for actuaries with this growth mindset is actually very, very promising. In the past, a lot of times, why do we have like certain insurance products here in Southeast Asia? Because we copied this from the US or the Europe. Why certain things are done here is really because things are done elsewhere in the same in the world. But unfortunately, we have also come to the realization that this region here is actually quite diverse. What works in Indonesia doesn't work in Myanmar. What works in Philippines does not work in Vietnam. So basically, for actuaries with a growth mindset, basically there's a lot of market opportunities to go and to go around the region to in terms of application of their skills, techniques, and what they learn into a real world situation where only actuaries in this market are really 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 known about. The other thing also, the region is becoming more and more geeky, right? So the appreciation for talents with these mathematical skills is really increasing very, very quickly. In the past, the appreciation is more for business skills, for administration skills, but over time, we see that more and more people are appreciating technical details, data analytics, and things like this in a much faster speed than before. So these are actually the things that really, really excites me in this region.
So Gareth, if I, I can see a story. Bayan talks about data in China, and China is in a sense is a fairly big ecosystem of its own in a digital world. It's very big, bigger than Europe a couple of times, right? And then Southeast Asia, and then I see Southeast Asia is emerging markets, very much like India and Africa. And Nicholas spoke very well about that. But I see how does it connect back to UK, right? If we start from a first principle, where are we in this conversation? It's because we are members of IFOA. And the DNA was that it was a great thing to be a fellow of IFOA. Yeah? That's a story. I don't know what Ryan's story is, Nicholas' story is, but it was a passport to a highly regarded professional qualification. And IFOA gives the professionalism, the aura of thought leadership, yeah, in a historical sense for the last 150 and in fact 200 to 300 years beyond when it was first founded, yeah, from the days of Gompers and John Morgan and so forth. But if our DNA is there, so I see an opportunity. I see an opportunity which requires us to leverage off the IFOA brand, but also the UK body must appreciate that the growth story here is actually a passport, right, to a future world, because no profession, it's not about actual profession. Right? If you're a journalist, if you're a lawyer, you're an accountant, if you're a radiographer, whatever, a lot of your tasks, if not your jobs, will be digitized away. Maybe not in 10 years' time, but certainly in 10 or 20 or 30 years' time. So the world is changing so fast, and I think that the growth story and the inventiveness story is something we must tap, you see. But the challenge is that how could we be forward-looking and embracing all this without losing what we have and honoring what we have in the past, which is a big challenge, right? So for me, it's the narrative of Southeast Asians, and we are connected by the English language, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and China, we are connected by the language, and the need for an international body. I think that is a big challenge, because if you could tap those sources, IFOA would be a great place. And I'm also minded to, I pick this up in Hong Kong and in China, and sometimes in Malaysia, about what is so different about our training. Yeah? Our training might be perceived to be slightly more sophisticated or more difficult. I don't think it's more difficult, but in the words of one of my senior colleagues, IFOA's positioning has always been about imparting understanding. It's not about imparting knowledge, yeah? Imparting understanding. And I spoke to a group of fellows of the Institute of Actuaries in China, and they told me how proud they were, although they do think that some of our written examinations were not necessary, but how proud they were, because it demonstrates that they can be well-rounded. And the employers say that when a fellow of IFOA becomes a fellow, he's ready to start work as an actuary, which I think does great credit, yeah, does great credit to our position. And we are really at an inflection point, because there are so many things happening at IFOA Central, right, about repositioning our syllabus and our education as a lifelong learning offering, with things like data science certificate, climate science, banking fellowship, AI, machine learning, and optionality modularization in the mix. Yeah. But pulling this off is not just about work activities, it's about perceptions and how we position it. Sorry, Gareth, for being wandering off a bit.
Okay.
Not at all, Sui Che. In fact, we're touching a little bit on the next question as ever, which is, what do we feel the biggest challenges are to achieving this future that we're seeing for actuaries? Diane, what do you think?
I think actuaries has some natural advantage in the AI and the big data area. They use some kind of similar base theories. So I hope that for IFOA, we can have, maybe can have more, we need to have more IFOA actuaries in China And our FOA exams has been very difficult. So the pass rate has always been very low. So I hope that we can have a higher pass rate and we can have more IFOA fellows in China.
Thank you. And challenges may be.
My turn. Yeah. So I think the biggest challenge that I see is really that not everyone has a growth mindset. Yeah. So for example, in our company, we have three corporate values: open communication, progressive, and can do. So progressive and can do are basically related to growth and growth mindset. So the challenge is really to be able to cultivate this growth mindset so that it's not only in terms of business growth, it's more also in terms of personal growth, personal development. How do we, there's this underlying intention that, you know, we want tomorrow to be better than today. And also when we approach a problem, it is always with an attitude that we can do rather than we cannot do. It's not to say that we can do everything, but if you have a way to look into a problem from a can-do attitude, you actually solve a lot more problems than if you approach a problem with a cannot-do attitude.
Gareth, in a very simple way, in terms of challenge, right, I think it's mindset is a big one. I think mindset and clarity of purpose, continue to stick to the strategy. I'm more at the center of IFOA because I'm part of the decision-making process. And I think it's coming together. It's holding, and with the recent presidential election, as long as we could hold to the narrative of VSMD and serving our members well in an international way, I think we'll get there. But it's about consistent coherence, right? Coherence, clarity of purpose, continue to say the same things, but in an imaginative way, in an engaging way. That will be the challenge. I have intrinsic trust and confidence in the capabilities of the profession, but we probably need more encouragement. So I'm quite optimistic. But put it another way, if you're not optimistic, then we are trying to do something which is going to fall on every profession, you know, because the digital is impacting everything. And the sustainability challenges and intergenerational issues, COVID-19, climate risk is affecting everything. So we are all being shaken, you know. So we are trying to respond in a strategic way, right? I don't think anyone would going to be criticizing us for lack of trying, yeah. So I'm in that space, yeah.
So Nicholas, sort of staying with this look ahead, in your view, how does the IFOA need to learn and adapt in the future?
Okay, I think the very simple short answer is basically IFOA just have to listen to what Su Xie has said all this while, which I think and pioneer many of which is also what I've heard from Suchet in this conversation. I see that aside from IFOA doing many things, right, he actually actively engages the members and try to explain like how some of these things actually relate back to the members, add value to the members. So I'm sure that IFOA does actually many activities that are beneficial to the members, but I mean, from my perspective is that most of these activities are outside of Southeast Asia, right? So although the situation has improved a lot, you know, since a few years ago, there's not many activities that actually I can physically attend. I mean, barring last year because of the pandemic, but there are many things that, you know, there are very many activities in this region. I think what the IFOA can do a bit more is like Suxian mentioned, it's not about not trying. Of course, there's always a possibility of doing more and trying harder, but sometimes also relate more or to the members or quantify some of these benefits for the members in terms of the dollars and cents, right? I mean, from the members' perspective, we belong to the we belong to the IFOA, we are part of the IFOA, we also want to contribute towards the to grow the profession, because we can't just point your finger to say what the IFOA can do, need to do better to learn and adapt. Each of us members ourselves also need to learn and adapt to the future, then collectively as a profession, we will actually have a better future. So sometimes the IFOA can help, is like to get the members together, to encourage the members to also collectively do this, and not just sit down there and do nothing and wait for the IFOA to come and do many things for them, right? So and this way the members can see, you know, when they contribute, when they do something, it actually benefits themselves eventually. Then I think the profession will be a lot stronger. This FIA credential that I have will be a lot more valuable. Yeah. I think this is what the members want as well.
Mm. Thank you, Nicholas. Bayan, China is, as you've said, such a huge market, and you've also worked in the UK. What can China learn from the West, and what can the West learn from China?
I think it's decided by the two totally different markets. UK, when I worked in UK, it's already a very stable market. It's a stable and a mature market. And it have very matured way and process of dealing with things. I think China can learn a great from these matured markets like UK, like other European countries, because we can look at the mistakes that was made before and to avoid that. And these two markets in a certain period made so similar mistakes, and we can learn from the process, the method, the way of doing things. There's a lot to learn, and I think China has been learning from the different mature markets, US, UK mostly, for China is a different thing, because it's growing so rapidly, and people are trying to seizing the opportunity, are trying to grab the new market. For health insurance, for the last 6 or 7 years, the compound increase rate is 35%, compound increasing rate. So that's maybe just a little bit low than the legendary, you know, VC fund. That's amazing, the increase. So I think, I worked in UK and I work in China. I feel very differently. Sometimes in China, we may not do things as perfectly and as mature as the UK market, but the actors here give me lots of, I have lots of respect to them. The reason is that they are very client focused. And sometimes when you want them to do something, the time is so tight and so unreasonable, and they will complete that for you. So the efficiency, the hardworking, the client focusing, and some actuaries in China, they are so great. They even try to, because you are in a very changing market. So unlike the UK market, there may be some trend you can seize. They're trying to even anticipate the trend and make their pricing differently, trying to seize the market. I have great respect for those actuaries. So I think both market, the size, the stage are different. For China, we have already learned a lot from the UK and the US, still learning. There's still so many to learn. But for a young market like China, I think people's passion, people's enthusiasm, people's efficiency is also worth the mature market to learn.
Yeah. Gerard, do you mind if I add a few comments here? To compare and contrast China and UK, both with very long histories, you can't do it any justice, right? But we could, maybe we can narrow the conversation using an actuarial lens, and maybe with my background, a bit of cultural psychological lens, and look for the strengths of both markets and why are we in this conversation, right? Why are we in this conversation? Without simplifying things, and look for their strengths. It is obvious to me that the Chinese response to digital opportunities have been full of energy and full of entrepreneurial spirit because they were leapfrogging from one very a system which doesn't even have credit card to one where you don't need credit card. Yeah? So because of their backwardness, they could leapfrog. And that applies to so many industries. So they are leaders in 5G and so forth. So the entrepreneurial energy of business is something which I think the UK could learn in terms of that speed, and especially in the area of digital. But why is IFOA important in China or for the time being? Because clearly China has the intellectual capability of reproducing our syllabus. Yeah? There's enough professors and academics and practitioners to reproduce a syllabus because it is sophisticated, but not. But it doesn't have that history and the reputation and the code and practices. Because what makes us a profession is not knowledge or skills. What makes us a profession is the culture, the practice, the language, and the code of conduct. And the language and code of conduct of IFOA goes back to 160 years, yeah? And that's come from thoughtfulness and a sense of ethics. And I'm not saying that other countries don't have a sense of ethics, but this sense of ethics is born from a professional history of care, competence, right? And in that regard, it confers a reputation. That's why a Malaysian wants to join IFOA. That's why the Monetary Authority of Singapore and the Indian Regulatory Authority respects the qualification called IFOA, because it's anchored in a credible history with a very convincing intellectual base, right? But of course, both cannot be too proud because reputation and prosperity can change overnight, over time. But that's what I think both sides can learn. The intellectual history, the thought leadership, the ethics, right? It is a more deliberate and thoughtful culture, whereas China is in a hurry. China is in a hurry, right, to catch up. And that is a cycle of history. But we happen to be in this particular cycle of history. So there's much to profit from collaboration and working together, which is our basic stance, of IFOA basic stance. Although the last 2 years have been difficult years for globalization, right? But my instinct and also IFOA instinct is that we should remain a global institution because the problems which face mankind is not restricted to one country, and we've got to work together. But I think I better draw the boundary there, restricted to professional affairs.
Final question, and then we'll be drawing our time here to a close. So this is to all my guests today. What would you say to young actuaries in the region who are just starting out with their studies? And maybe we'll start with Nicholas.
Okay, so I think in this region, it's actually a very exciting time for the young actuaries to start and join the profession because first of all, more and more people are starting to recognize the value of the actuarial profession, and IFOA is also becoming more and more prominent in this region, right? This has actually attracted many students entering and intending to enter into our profession. So what has happened is that this has actually made the profession very, very competitive. So for example, for one job position, we can have more than 100 applicants. So in this type of competitive situation, right, the fittest shall survive. So if you actually make it out of this system, you are really at the top of your game. So this actually will encourage young actuaries to become a lot more knowledgeable, a lot more skillful, and they will become really, really, really sought after. So it's like to be in the game when the bar is actually continuously increasing, it is really, really a very exciting time for actuaries to join the profession.
For me, I'm fellow of IFOA. I'm also a fellow for the China Actuary Association, and I have many students, perhaps who are Australia actuary profession, or some are FSA, the US actuary profession. From what I understand, all the exams, I personally feel that the IFOA exams are more close to the real world work. I'm a person that I always more interested in the real world. So why I think the IFOA exams is more difficult, perhaps a little more difficult than others, is because I feel it's more close to the real work, real world we are touching. So that's why I like our IFOA. And I hope that you can enjoy our studies and also use the study to help our actuary the real work. Yeah.
I was just coming up. Seize the day, carpe diem, seize the day for young actuaries across the region. The time cannot be better. And I'm not sure our exams are more difficult. It might require you to do more work. For me, that is not an advantage. That is a differentiator. So I don't think it's a disadvantage. It's an advantage. And I'm not sure it is more difficult. Yeah, I'm not sure it's more difficult. It's different maybe. But for young actuaries, you decided to be an actuary because you are reasonably good in maths. You're not the sort of Einsteinian level, but you're quite good in maths. You want to work in organizations. You want to work in business areas. This is the best profession you're in, you know, and IFOA is really transforming to be, to perpetuate our relevance in the domains we work in, life insurance, pensions, health, general insurance, risk management, investment management, banking, climate science, but also beyond, right? Also beyond, because of our highly transferable skill set. But it's not a skill set that matters, it's our mindset, yeah? So seize the day, my friends across the region and throughout the world.
Well, thank you so much. What a great sentiment for us to draw our conversation to a close on. Thank you so much for all your time today. It's been a truly fascinating insight into what's shaping the actuarial profession in the 21st century. For those interested in our entire series, just search IFOA Reinventing the Profession to access all our deep dive content. And it only remains for me to thank our guests for their time and to thank our listeners for joining us today. Thank you.